Krishnaya Bhutale, Srimade Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine, Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine, Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gauravaktavinda, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we have started a little late today and we have a number of verses to cover. How many verses? 12 to 17. So we have 6 verses to cover. So we just do it together, not responsive. Where are we? 10. It's the wrong bookmark here. Okay. So we'll start together. Sa evam bharyaya vipro bahusha prarthito muhu ayam hi paramo labha uttama shloka darshanam iti sanchintya manasa gamanaya matim dadhe api asti upayanam kinchit grihe kalyani diyatam. Shukadeva Goswami continued, when his wife thus repeatedly implored him in various ways, the Brahman thought to himself, to see Lord Krishna is indeed the greatest achievement in life. Thus he decided to go, but first he told her, my good wife, if there is anything in the house I can bring as a gift, please give it to me. Purport. Sudama was naturally humble, and thus although at first he was dissatisfied with his wife's proposal, finally, he settled his mind and decided to go. Now, the last detail was that he had to take a gift for his friend. Text 14. Yachitpa chaturo mushtin vipran prathakatandulan chaila khandenatan badva bhartre pradadupayanam. Sudama's wife begged 4 handfuls of flat rice from neighboring brahmanas, tied up the rice in a torn piece of cloth and gave it to her husband as a present for Lord Krishna. Text 15. Satanadaya vipragya prayayau dvarakam kila Krishna sandarshanam mayam katham syariti chintayam. Taking the flat rice, the saintly Brahman set off for Dwarka, all the while wondering, how will I be able to have Krishna's audience? Purport. Among other things, Sudama assumed that the gatekeepers would stop him. Text 16 through 17. Trini gulmani atiyaya tisra kakshascha savijaha vipro gamyandhaka vrishninam griheshu achuta dharminam griham dviyashta sahasranam Mahishinam Hare Dvijaha Viveshaikatamam Srimad Brahmanandam Gatoyatha. The learned Brahman, joined by some local Brahmanas, passed through guard stations and went through 3 gateways, and then he walked by the homes of Lord Krishna's faithful devotees, the Andhakas and the Vrishnis, which ordinarily no one could do. He then entered one of the opulent palaces belonging to Lord Hari's 16,000 queens, and when he did so, he felt as if he were attaining the bliss of liberation. Purport. When the saintly Brahman entered the precincts of Lord Krishna's palaces and then actually entered one of the palaces, he completely forgot everything else. And thus his state of mind is compared to that of one who has just achieved the bliss of spiritual liberation. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti quotes from the Padma Purana Uttarakhanda, wherein we learn that the Brahman actually entered the palace of Rukmini. Satu Rukmini Antahpura Dwari Shanam Tushnim Stitaha. He stood for a moment in silence at the doorway of Queen Rukmini's palace. Om Ajnana Timurandasya Jnana Anjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruvaya Namaha. Today we are discussing Sudama Brahmin's journey to Krishna's palaces in Dwaraka. Now Sudama, I don't know if the students have heard this pastime before, but he was a very poor person. He was a Brahmin, but extremely poor. It's described that he was so poor that he had nothing to eat. And because he ate nothing, the veins in his hands stood out. You know, sometimes when you become really thin, you can see people's veins. And he had no clothes, really nice clothes to wear. They were all torn. And his wife also didn't have anything to eat. And in Vedic society, Brahmins would beg, go from door to door. And so his wife and Sudama Brahmin would beg for food. So this is the backdrop. And the question I want to ask is, and try to answer, this is a very complex topic, is why do people suffer? So we'll start with some answers from students, and then we look at the suffering of, in general, suffering, and then more specifically for devotees. So, and I've noticed in the past that Krishna Sharanam keeps quiet, they don't really speak up so much. So, I would like some participation if possible from Krishna Sharanam also today. So the question is, why are some people poor and other people rich in the world? Or why do some people seem to have all the happiness and other people seem to have all the distress? Yes. Some people have good and other people have bad karma. Yes. Because we are born in the material world. Yes. It's Kali Yoga. I'm very happy with the answers here because this means that your education is bearing fruit. We have to be philosophers, Prahlad Nara says right from the beginning. So, Krishna Sharanam? Don't point to others, Sheena. Since you pointed, it's your turn. Let me hear from you. Why do people suffer? So that we can be reminded, what a wonderful answer, that the material world is not our goal in life. Okay. I have a PowerPoint presentation today. Thank you very much for the answers. I feel like the lecture is over. But that's okay. Click here. Thank you. This one. So let me open this PowerPoint on my laptop so I can actually see what I'm speaking. And then we go from there. So we're going to talk about karma, but we're not really talking about karma. We're going to talk about devotees. But first we should be aware of what karma is. The word karma has different meanings depending on the context. One meaning is action. Kritavan kila karmani. So this verse comes in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the first canto, first chapter. And there karma is being used in the context of Krishna's actions. Krishna is above karma. So the word karma can mean different things depending on the context. One meaning is action. It can mean transcendental activities as in the case of this verse. And it can also mean reaction. And what I'm going to focus on is reaction. Reaction means the result. So we do something, we get something. Can you think of something like that? A result? Yes? You punch someone, they punch you back. You're already experienced at such a young age. I'm impressed. and philosophically astute. Anything else? Yes? If you smack a ball to the... If you roll it slowly towards the wall, it won't come back to you, but if you smack it, it'll come back. Okay. Yes? If you smack something now, somebody may smack you later in the next life. Now, can we get an example, one last example, which does not involve smacking? Yes. Loudly, sorry, say that again, I didn't catch that. If you don't do your homework, you'll have to do more homework. See, so the principle of action and then result or reaction, reaction is another word for result, is applied everywhere. You can see that in Newton's laws and you can see that in your own life. It's not very difficult or profound to see. Whatever we do, there is a reaction to it. Okay. So what about this karma as reaction? There are different types of reactions. There are four types of karma. And we are looking at reaction, not action. Prarabdha karma, aprarabdha karma, kuta karma and bija karma. These may sound difficult words, but they are not difficult concepts. Very nicely explained by Srila Rupa Goswami in the Nectar of Devotion. So prarabdha karma. Prarabdha means that which has already begun. That which has commenced is prarabdha. Here are some examples. I am supposed to be clicking this. Sorry, my fault. Must have been wondering what he's talking about. So prarabdha karma, aprarabdha karma, kuta and bija. Prarabdha is commenced karma, commenced result. We are already getting the result. That's prarabdha. What are the type examples? You know, you might have a healthy body, a healthy mind, and that is an example of prarabdha karma. You might have a sickly body. That's also an example of prarabdha karma. Both happiness and distress, material happiness and distress, are results of karma. We are born with these bodies. There is nothing you can do about your body. You're with it. You're stuck with it. That is already begun prarabdha karma. Okay. Let's look at the other one. Aprarabdha karma. Aprarabdha. A means in Sanskrit negation. And so aprarabdha means that which has not begun. Oh, press the button. Sorry, I'm pressing it here and I expect that it's working there. So aprarabdha karma is that which has not begun. But not only that, it's not going to ever begin in this life. It will begin in future lives. It will happen in future lives. That's a classification. That karma which is not going to manifest in this life, but in the future. What's bija? Bija means there are many results that we're going to get in this future life. Next month, tomorrow, this afternoon, that have not begun now, but they're going to happen. And that's called bija. And when bija becomes manifested, it's called prarabdha. So all prarabdha karma has been bija in some way or form. But it's going to happen in this life. That's why it's bija. Okay? If you have questions, interrupt me. I'm going to go a little fast because there's a lot to cover. Kuta is those reactions which are about to become bija. This is a subtle difference. Thank you. Maybe somebody can take this because I'm going to keep doing this. I got two computers to... So, kuta refers to those reactions which are about to become bija. Sometimes we have maybe not with the young kids, but maybe the adults can identify with this. Sometimes we have some kind of a premonition. Premonition. And that would be kuta. And this is going to happen in the next life. So this is again not premonitions of karma in this life, but for the next life, and that's kuta. So these are some technical definitions. And I thought I would give them out just so that everybody gets something. And then we are going to get into deep philosophy, maybe. At that time, I might lose some of you, so please forgive me for that, some of the younger children. So now, what about this karma? People ask, well, where is this karma going? Where is it coming from? Who is giving it? So Baldev Vidyabhushan, one of the great acharyas, he wrote a commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, which Srila Prabhupada based his Gita on also in many places. And he writes that karmas are stored in the subtle body. What's the subtle body? Anybody? What is the meaning of the word subtle? You cannot see it. So what is the subtle body? Yes, Mataji? Mind, intelligence, and false ego. Can we see the mind? Can you see my mind right now? Can you see my intelligence? Even if you tried, you won't be able to see it. Can you see my false ego? Wonderful answer. Who said yes? This is a wise sage. We can see false ego in some people. At least what we see is the result of false ego. We don't see the object false ego. But excellent. So we can deduce that somebody has intelligence. He has poisonous intelligence. He has good intelligence. We can perceive if somebody is very smart, analytical mind or not. So we can perceive these things, but we can't really see them. That's why they are subtle. Now the subtle body is not destroyed at the end of death. It goes from one body to another. It accompanies us. And the subtle body is where all our karmas are stored, the record of our karma, in the form of mental impressions and desires. There's also subtle beings that we cannot see, like Chitragupta, who is Yamaraj's assistant. He writes the account of our actions and accordingly gives us the results. So this is a very subtle system that controls our lives, how we live. There's this question of free will in the world, and karma is a big part of it. I don't want to get into that too much today, so we'll move on. Because I want to talk about devotees. And so the question is, because Sudama Brahmin is a devotee, and yet he is suffering by his own admission and his wife's admission. So how do we understand this? So why do devotees suffer? The answer from all our acharyas is that the devotees do not suffer because of karma. Whenever a devotee suffers, and this does not just include the prema bhaktas, those devotees that are on the highest platform of prema, like Sudama Brahmin, who has prema mixed with Aishwarya, the knowledge of God's powers, not the bhava level, not even the sadhaka level, even the person who is performing devotional service, as Prabhupada calls neophyte, even that person does not suffer because of karma. This is an important point. But the purpose and the type of suffering is different, and I'm going to analyze those, going in this hierarchy of prema, bhava, and sadhaka. So I'm going to draw extensively on Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentaries and Prabhupada's commentaries. Vishwanath Chakravarti, because a lot of the information on this topic is in the 10th canto and in the 11th canto. And so I study his commentaries a lot, and that's why I'm going to refer to his commentaries and answering some of these questions. So Vishwanath Chakravarti writes in the purport to 1088.8, the suffering arising from karma and the suffering arising from the Lord, two different things. They are like the suffering arising from receiving a beating from an enemy and suffering from one's own mother. One is like poison, the other is like nectar. That's the distinction of the suffering, even for the sadhaka, at the sadhaka stage, versus somebody who is not a devotee. Now the question is, why is that? What's the difference? We just heard of Nanda Mataji, her hand was caught in the sugarcane mill, what is it called? Machine, press, yeah. And that suffering is intense, and any other person who would not be a devotee, if that person's hand was caught, you know, the neurons are firing and the brain is registering and there is pain, and there is a lot of pain and suffering. So it seems rather a lofty claim to say that, well, that suffering is like poison and the other is, you know, and the devotee's suffering is like nectar, because it's suffering. So Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti points out the difference, and I'm going to try and return to this theme over and over again, and hopefully I'm able to convey. This is a very, when I started doing this, preparing for this lecture, I realized this is an extremely comprehensive topic, and I'm not going to be able to cover all angles. Let's look at first the suffering of the prema bhakta. The bhakta who is in prema, that is the highest platform. It's like Sudama Brahmin. The Sudama Brahmin is suffering apparently because he's starving, but he's not suffering. It only superficially looks like suffering. So that's the first point in the prema bhakta. The suffering, there is no duality. It's all bliss, paramananda. It's hard for us to understand because we don't have experience maybe of such emotions. But Sudama Brahmin is not suffering. He's only externally seen to be suffering because of Krishna's arrangements. But it is actually, he's paramananda, bliss. So that's the first point. How is that true? At some point we have to say, this is what the acharyas explain. Someday I will understand, but not now. But that's okay. We have to accept theoretically at least that's true. What is the purpose for suffering in prema bhaktas? This is not a broad, generalizable statement, but I'm giving you an example. This comes in the Leela where Krishna is performing pastimes with the gopis. And we know that Krishna disappeared while enjoying with them. And the gopis suffered like anything. They became mad. Where is Krishna? Where has he gone? And they were asking the trees and the creepers, where is Krishna? They were reduced to madness, you could say. So when Krishna reappeared, he justified why he gave them that suffering. And that justification is verse 10.32.20. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti comments, and this is his commentary, and I'm going to read this. Krishna says, I appear and then I disappear in order to increase their attachment. He's trying to justify why sometimes, even in his leelas, there is separation and apparent suffering. When a poor man gains wealth, that means they have received prema, these devotees have pure love for Krishna. But then they lose him, so they got Krishna and then lost him. He becomes absorbed in thoughts of that wealth and cannot think of anything else, such as eating and drinking. Imagine you were a billionaire businessman, and the next day you are reduced to being homeless. What are you going to do? You're going to continue pondering, how did this happen? I lost $1 billion. Look at where I was yesterday, and now look where I am. Those who have attained prema and then lose the Lord react similarly to this type of a person. It is desirable that those worshipping me have this complete attachment to me. One should not think that only if I am present that I respond, and if I'm not present, I do not respond. But then my promise, I will respond as they worship me, would be broken. This is Yatha Mam Prapadyante in the fourth chapter. So this is the purpose for why prema bhaktas suffer, one purpose. Well, what about sadhaka? Sadhaka is somebody who is performing regulated principles of devotional service, practicing Vaidhi Bhakti. Vishwanath Chakravarti writes, again in that same purport, this 10.88.8 is the famous verse that Prabhupada was inspired by. Yasya ham anugranami harishetat dhanam shanaihi tato dhanam tyajantyasya svajana dukkha-dukkhitam. Prabhupada had major reverses in his business. He lost a lot of money and he struggled a lot to keep it up, but it wouldn't work. At some point he realized, and this verse he had heard, this verse became the inspiration for him. What it means is, when Krishna favors somebody especially, he takes away everything from him. And then svajana dukkha dukkhitam, then his relatives say, we don't need you, we don't want you, what use are you? He becomes rejected by society, by everybody, and then he has no other shelter but Krishna. So Vishwanath Chakravarti writes in the purport, a man suffers misery because of loss of wealth. He suffers because of rejection by his relatives, because he is poor. But this suffering being given by the Lord is not the result of karma. So Prabhupada was not suffering the results of karma when he lost the business and all that. Even the happiness given to the Lord's devotees is not the result of karma. So if we become materially happy in this life, that is also not pious activities manifesting themselves. For a devotee, that is, Vishwanath Chakravarti writes, an unrequested result of bhakti. When the devotee performs bhakti, he's not doing it for material wealth or material prosperity or even escape from distress. But these things come of their own accord, unrequested. And that is Krishna's arrangement. One other aspect of this is that the suffering we have could also be the result of offenses to devotees. So, more on that later. I'll skip this because there's a lot of words to read here. The question can come, how can the Lord be affectionate to his devotee? The Lord loves the devotee so much. He has expressed this over and over again. Why would he make him suffer? And this question is not easy to answer. It's perplexing. Sometimes we see very exalted devotees suffer things like stroke, and paralysis, and they're reduced to being in a wheelchair, for example. It is difficult to rationalize this. Why? When somebody has given their lives to Krishna. Vishnu Chakravarti writes in the same purport, the father, though affectionate to his sons, gives them the austerity of studying by taking away their sources of enjoyment. A child might not want to do homework, like was pointed out. Then the father takes away all the enjoyment so that then the person has to focus on homework. No TV, no cartoons, no computer, no play, no nothing. Do your homework. No enjoyment, you're forced to do homework. But is that a sign of cold-heartedness or cruelty on the part of the father? The father knows that the action is a sign of his affection, though the son does not appreciate it at that time. And so we cannot appreciate many things. We don't appreciate that we are the soul, not the body, after hearing about it over and over again. We do not appreciate that Krishna is the only objective of our lives. We still have so many other things going on. In the same way, we may not appreciate how Krishna might be showing his affection by giving suffering to devotees. So that's what this means. How should we see suffering? This is the famous 10.14.88, Tapte Anukampam Susamikshamano. Very inspiring verse. Vishnu Chakravarti's purport. How should we see suffering when we get it? The devotee understands that happiness and distress that he experiences duty performing bhakti and committing aparad are the mercy of the Lord. We may be performing aparad knowingly or unknowingly, and we are getting distressed. That's how we should see. The devotee thinks that this is the arrangement of the Lord for his benefit. So Vishwanath is writing how we should think. He's giving us words. The Lord knows and I do not know. Karma and time have no effect on the devotee, so it must be his personal arrangement. By his mercy, he sometimes gives me happiness. Sometimes he gives me distress, considering how to engage me in his service. So this is how we should see suffering. The recommendation, how do we go on if we are suffering? How should we go on with our lives when there is misery and distress at every step? Hopefully life is not that bad. I might be making it out to be too bad. Depends on how you see it. So as remaining alive is the cause of a good son receiving his inheritance. So what does this mean? If I am the son of a very wealthy man, I just have to stay alive. Someday I'm going to get the inheritance. That's what Vishnu Chakravarti is saying. The same way, just remain alive in devotion. The devotee remaining alive in this world with steadiness on the path of bhakti, we will conquer material energy. We will go back to Godhead. That determination is all we need. Distress will come, whatever happens, stay alive in bhakti, don't give up. This is Vishnu Chakravarti's assurance. So with steadiness in the path of bhakti, this is the cause for receiving freedom from samsara and service to the Lord. If you don't stay alive in devotion, it is like our body is like a bellows inhaling and exhaling air. Dhritaya iva shvasanti asubhrito yadite anuvidha. It's quite a graphic analogy. Our lungs are inflated and then they collapse while we breathe, right? But if we are not alive in devotion, we are basically dead. So it's just like the bellows that are breathing. Have you seen the bellows that you used to ignite the fire? Maybe not. So purpose for abhava bhakta. Now this is becoming a little technical, so I will quickly conclude. In the purport to 10.32.20, bhava bhaktas are those that have not achieved the prema platform. They are the preliminary level of prema. So they worship Krishna with Nama Kirtan, Nama Sankirtan. So Vishwanath Chakravarti says, for those surrendered souls who worship me through Nama Kirtan and other means, but they have not achieved Prema, I do not respond in order to make their worship more perfect. Not seeing me, these souls develop humility. Everything I have done has been useless because I am an offender and could not get a drop of mercy. I am most unfortunate. Constantly thinking in this way, bhakti grows predominantly and there is no lust and anger left because of extreme humility. What is the purpose for the Bhava Bhakta's suffering? Prabhupada writes in 5.8.26. This is Bharat Maharaj's pastime. Bharat Maharaj is a Bhava Bhakta. He is not a Prema Bhakta. He is a Bhava Bhakta. But Bharat Maharaj, Krishna arranged the deer. You could say, well, Bharat Maharaj fell down by his karma. No, but in devotion, there is no karma. So the deer was sent by Krishna. It was his arrangement to elevate him even further. So Prabhupada writes, how can a devotee be affected by his past misconduct and vicious activities? In Brahma Samhita 5.54, it is said, Karmani nirdahati kintu cha bhakti bhajam. For those engaged in devotional service, bhakti bhajan, the results of past deeds are indemnified. According to this, Bharat Maharaj could not be punished for his past misdeeds. There are none. The conclusion must be that Bharat Maharaj purposefully became over-attracted to the deer and neglected his spiritual advancement. To immediately rectify his mistake, for a short time he was awarded the body of a deer. This was just to increase his desire for mature devotional service. So what I'm trying to say here is we have to be careful in judging people. First of all, we shouldn't judge people, but we have this intrinsic defense mechanism, you know, what's good for me, what's not, and we tend to ascribe motives and make judgments about devotees. But this is all going on at a level that we cannot understand because Krishna is in the mix. So the objection could be raised, why does Krishna not rectify devotees in some other way? Why give suffering? Do something else. Give happiness and rectify them. You're God, you can do anything you want. So Vishwanath Chakravarti says, no, if he did that, then the secret of bhakti as being the most potent weapon against Maya would be lost. He says, in order to preserve the secret of bhakti, to avoid uprooting the opinions of the speculators, and to increase the longing of his devotees. Those are the three reasons why suffering is given and no other mechanism is used. If he didn't give suffering, everybody would want happiness or whatever it is. They think, well, the Krishna's, you know, you worship Krishna and you get whatever you want. So then the secret nature of bhakti becomes lost. The speculators would not be able to speculate. Oh, Krishna must be God because he's giving whatever you want. So then, you know, you can't live out your desires. Oh, I want to reject God. And then also, more than happiness, suffering increases longing. This is rasa tattva, and Vishwanath Chakravarti explains here in terms of rasa. What is the rasa tattva of suffering? The sunrise appears splendid because of the darkness. We appreciate the sunrise more when there is darkness. In the summer, we appreciate cool winds more. In the cold, we appreciate warmth more. In the darkness, a lamp appears splendid rather than if it was the sun was out. Food tastes delicious when there is suffering from hunger. This is just the intrinsic nature of a living being. And so suffering is the best way to rectify us. This is the conclusion. How do we see defects in devotees? Sometimes we might see devotees suffering. We might see devotees who are poor, like Sudama Brahman. Or we might see devotees that are very rich, like Pundarik Vidyanidhi is an example. So how should we see it? If somebody is suffering, it does not mean that a person is suffering because of his sinful activities. And this is a verse that Prabhupada quotes again in that Bharat Maharaj pastime. This is from the Narasimha Purana. Bhagavati cha harav ananya cheta bhrushamalino api virajate manushyah nahi shashakalusha chabihi kadachit timirapara bhavatam upaiti chandraha. Even if one fully engaged in the devotional service of the Lord is sometimes found engaged in abominable activities, these activities should be considered to be like spots that resemble the mark of a rabbit on the moon. The moon has spots. The moon is beautiful, but it has some spots. Such spots do not become an impediment to the diffusion of moonlight, but the moon still does its job. Similarly, the accidental fall down of a devotee from the path of saintly character does not make him abominable. How to see a devotee who may have material desires? We might have the tendency to say, oh, this person, so fallen, so many years doing devotional service, so many material desires. So 11.20, 27 and 28 are very instructive and a must read. Vishnu Chakravarti writes, the devotee condemns material enjoyment, but he cannot help partaking of them. Yet the devotee continues to worship Krishna with faith and determination. This is for a sadhaka devotee. He writes, the devotee does not have inclination to unfavorable things to the same extent that he has firm determination for bhakti. We have to weigh these things. Okay, so there are material desires. The devotee knows the material desires are bad, and he cannot help but partake in them. This is the nature of the body. But he has firm faith in Krishna that one day I will be purified. So if he does not have inclination to unfavorable things, to the same extent he has firm determination for bhakti, then the devotee cannot be criticized. We are in no position to say anything. How are we going to determine these things? These are subtle, complex things at a very deep personal level. So the best thing for us is to stay out of judgmental activities. Here is more. It is not that the material desires will stay forever. When an intelligent person engages constantly in worshipping me through bhakti, all material desires will be destroyed since I am situated in the heart. This is a very nice verse that I like, 11:14-18. Badhyamano api mad bhakto vishayair ajitendriya. See these beautiful words. Badhyamano, you're bound. Even though you're bound, badhyamano api, even though he may be bound, mad bhakto, my devotee, vishayair ajitendriya, he has not been able to conquer the senses. Prayah pragalbhaya bhaktya vishayair nabhibhuyate. My dear Uddhav, if my devotee has not fully conquered his senses, he may be harassed by material desires, but because of unflinching devotion for me, he will not be defeated. We may be harassed by material desires, but we will not be defeated by material desires. So how should we see? And this is a famous verse from the Bhagavad Gita. We cannot criticize a devotee who commits sin, and we cannot challenge his position as a devotee. This is Vishnu Chakravarti's commentary. Prabhupada supports it, and also Krishna is saying it. Declare it boldly, Kaunteya Pratijani. It is an instruction from Krishna. That's how Vishnu Chakravarti presents it. The devotee who commits sin is not criticized, and his position as a devotee is not denied. And this is the verse, Apiche Sudara Charo Bhajate Maam Ananya Bhak Sadhur Eva Samantavya Samyak Vyavasatihi Saha. Prabhupada translates, even if one commits the most abominable action, if he is engaged in devotional service, he is to be considered saintly because he is properly situated in his determination. Shyamakunda Prabhu, is Prabhupada's disciple, once told me that his response is, you know, somebody might be covered with mud, and somebody might be covered with mud and is in the shower. Maybe this came from Prabhupada. There's a big difference. You can't complain if the person is in the shower, the person is trying to clean off the mud. He has mud, but he's cleaning it off. Whereas the person who is not in the shower has the problem. So, I guess got switched off. But anyway, so that's where I will end. Sorry it went a little too long today. And if there are comments, questions.
Thank you for that. It was very nice. I admit I don't know the exact place it is, but when I read it many years ago in a purport to Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada said, he said, for the devotee there is no suffering. And then he classifies it further. He says, for the real devotee there is no suffering because he sees that everything is being directed by Krishna. So he just sees that this is the action of Krishna. Do you know exactly where that is?
There's so many books, Prabhupada.
Would you
look it up quickly? But it's consistent with what I presented. The prema bhakta, there is no suffering. It looks like it, but it isn't.
Yeah, what you said there, it really expands it. So I really appreciate that.
Thank you. Trivikram Prabhu, and then there's two Matajis and Krishna.
Sometimes it it seems like the suffering becomes unbearable, intolerable. And then the sadhaka becomes maybe even critical of the Lord.
Critical of the Lord.
Yeah, like this is too much. I cannot handle it.
Bhishma Chakravarti writes that Krishna for the sadhaka, he specifically speaks about the sadhaka in the Bharat Maharaj pastime. Krishna doesn't give unbearable suffering. Krishna gives suffering exactly that the sadhaka can take. If the sadhaka is seeing it as intolerable, that is his offensive attitude or his limited vision. We may not understand. First of all suffering is intolerable. Nobody wants suffering. Okay. Now once we have it, we are stuck with it. But if we blame Krishna for it, that's why all these instructions are being given. That's why all this philosophy is being given. We have to learn how to see it. So Krishna is perfect. His suffering is perfect too. He never gives intolerable suffering. This is Vishnu Chakravarti's conclusion. The question with Mataji is, and then I'll continue. Yes. But,
In relation to suffering, this is the ABCs. I'm usually bewildered by the material energy, but every once in a while I have some clarity in mind. And you know, some of us suffer, you know, more than others. And you know, I was walking the other day, and I was just looking, you know, at everybody and seeing how everyone, from the material point of view, everybody is suffering the same. Losing children, you know, getting in car accidents, getting cancer, you know, stubbing their toe from A to Z. We're all on the same. But just, I was just wanted to share it. But so I was thinking to myself, well, you know, we're all suffering the same way. What is it what is the determining factor in our consciousness that separates us or makes us, what's the shelter there? And by following the order of the spiritual master, we're given that protection, by taking shelter of Krishna, that's the deciding factor between who's taking shelter of Krishna and who's not. And I know it's the ABCs, but it was a really profound realization I had the other day. Is that, you know, because we're all jivatmas, right? We're all marginal energy. So, you know, it's in our heart, what's in our heart and how we take shelter. The person sitting next to us may not be, you know, he may also be taking shelter, you know, but the devotee, to that degree that we take shelter all the time, is to our benefit, and we that's what makes a pure devotee, is that we take shelter of Krishna at every moment, you know, whether we're getting good or we're getting bad, it doesn't matter. It's all the same, really. Anyway, that was my realization.
So. Yeah, I think if I can phrase it, what you're trying to say, or at least what I understood
what
of it. Whether we take lessons from our suffering, whether the point of suffering is met, which is taking shelter of Krishna, or not, is up to us. And some people take shelter of Krishna, and for the same suffering, others blame him, or are indifferent, or don't even think of him. So, the teachable moment passes, and we are only exposed now to further suffering in the future. We have to learn at some point. Till we don't learn, it's going to come.
Thank you.
Mataji, you had a question?
Yeah, it's about the last part of the class. What about pretenders?
What about?
Pretenders, people who actually act as devotees, but ultimately cause harm to...
What about pretenders, who pretend that they are devotees, but...
But who ultimately cause harm to other Vaishnavas?
Who hurt others. Okay. So, yeah, the question was, well... You know, our vision should be that we shouldn't criticize somebody or look at a devotee who may accidentally perform sinful activities. See, it is a question of orientation, internal orientation. If somebody is damaging, hurtful, harmful to others, it is our responsibility to speak up. If there was a criminal who was walking around here in the garb of a devotee, we can't say, well, he's a devotee, do whatever he likes, because our responsibility is towards devotees also, towards the other devotees. We have to protect the people amongst us, the four categories of living entities, the brahmanas, the cows, the old people and children. That is our devotional responsibility. And so, not seeing defects in others does not mean abdicating our responsibility to others. Those are two different things. Our internal orientation should be, we maintain our distance from those that we don't derive inspiration from. Those that are harmful, we do something about it. We complain to the temple authorities. And that falls under the gambit of devotional service. It is not an offensive behavior. Does that answer your question? Thank you. Keshav Krishna Prabhu had a question. Madhumati Mataji had a question. Madhumati Mataji, sorry.
You made a point that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that not to give happiness because not to purify by happiness because bhakti secrecy would be out, so to speak, yeah? You made that point about... So then I think about Lord Chaitanya, I mean, his whole mission is to give bhakti, you know, to everybody freely in happiness and chant, dance and be happy. So it's, and Vishwanath, we understand, he came after Lord Chaitanya. So maybe you can explain further.
So Srila Prabhupada was once, I was struck by this debate. He had a debate with these philosophers. I forget where it was. I think it was with university professors somewhere in California perhaps. And he was saying, you're looking for God. You don't know who God is. Here is Krishna. I'm telling you, he is God. Why don't you accept? And he kept asking the question. You don't know who it is. I'm telling you who it is, because they're philosophers, they admit they don't know who God is. He says, this is Krishna, why don't you accept? Well, they don't accept. So it is not so easy. But if he had said, here is Krishna, see he's lifting that Toyota Camry with his left pinky, then it would be hard to deny that. If Krishna was manifest on the earth, if you could see with your own eyes, you know, Krishna doing some magnificent feat, then it would be hard to deny it. If you had videos, if you had pictures, they would say this person is not human, alien, whatever. So the point that Krishna Chakravarti is trying to make is, this is an open secret, but it still is a secret for those who don't want to accept it. But it's open for those who want to accept it. Right? So that's the understanding. Prabhupada would use the word cheap. Don't think Krishna is so cheap. So, it might be a little difficult for those who insist on experience and direct perception as the only acceptable means for accepting Krishna's supremacy. It can be tough. So there are downsides to it also, I guess. You had a question? And then Prana Govinda.
You know, we hear that, I heard actually in a class that when one suffers, that he minimizes the bad reactions. So when I fell off a tree and I suffered that time, I was thinking, well, I'm minimizing the bad reactions. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is mentioning there that this bad reaction is not necessarily that bad karma.
Vishwanath Chakravarti says there are two types of prarabdha karma. There is an auspicious prarabdha karma and an inauspicious prarabdha karma. The inauspicious prarabdha karma is the what you are talking about, exhausting the bad reactions. The auspicious prarabdha karma is like the beating that Krishna is giving to his devotee, the suffering that Krishna is deliberately giving. And that auspicious prarabdha karma will also end when we are back to Godhead. After the purpose is served, Krishna doesn't give the suffering. But if you don't use that opportunity to see it as Krishna's arrangement and learn, then we lose the chance. Then it is going to come, keep coming. That's what I'm saying. So the auspicious prarabdha karma will also end. But it will end with Krishna's, when Krishna's purpose is fulfilled. And Krishna is an autocrat. He is independent. He can do what he likes. So he's going to keep giving to us till we are reformed, you could say. What else was I going to say? But it is auspicious. The difference between auspicious and inauspicious prarabdha karma is that the inauspicious prarabdha karma, even if it is your bad reactions are getting exhausted, new bad reactions are occurring because the seed of your material desires are not going away. By the fall from the tree, that does nothing to the material desires in the heart. So prarabdha karma never ends, actually. It will never end. Because it will, bija, kuta, this all will continue going. But the prarabdha karma that Krishna gives, the auspicious prarabdha karma that he gives, it ends with the purpose, when the purpose is met. And there are no new desires for enjoyment because of that karma. That prarabdha karma is eradicating the desires for enjoyment. Because, you know, like I was reading, you become humble, you realize, well, what am I doing here? This material body, this material world, this is not mine. So we become reoriented, and then the desire for material karma also goes away. Yes, yes. Pretenders, yes.
Is there actually someone who is a devotee could be a pretender?
Yes, people who are offensive. See, the devotee can become offensive towards other devotees. And with offenses, the Hati Mata offense, you can destroy the garden. And when that happens, you become a pretender. You know, because you criticize, you don't really know what devotional service is anymore. You might have been at even at the bhava level, you know, you can fall down. You can become bhava abhas, you can go down into lower and lower realms of, and you have to start all over again.
But when he hurts others, is it him actually hurting? I mean, or is it some reaction that
like I said, the devotee is not under karma, right? So the devotee's activities are not governed by karma. They are governed by Krishna's arrangement or his offenses. Two things. Those are the two main things that determine what's happening in the devotee's life. What happens to the victim? Now I'm speculating. But I would say, just like the law of karma, for the victim, if the victim is a devotee, that's Krishna's arrangement for them. But I think somebody might disagree. Microphone.
We know that a real devotee won't take offense, like in the case of Ambarish Maharaj was offended by Durvasa Muni, and the fact that Durvasa Muni couldn't take any other shelter at the end, he has to go by advice of Lord Vishnu. You have to go and take shelter with that devotee. When he came back, Ambarish Maharaj hadn't even taken any offense. So if somebody offends us, we shouldn't feel offended, right?
But at the same time, emotions are present in devotees and they cannot be denied. So Ramachandra Puri, for example, criticized Chandra Mahaprabhu. Devotees didn't want his company. So you could say they were offended, and Ramachandra Puri was an offender. So yeah, there are both aspects to it. If prema, a bhakta on the prema platform, like Srila Prabhupada, was washing the dishes of his disciples, cleaning after them, he is not taking offense, but it doesn't mean that we are safe now, we can offend, and people are not going to take offense. We have to be aware also. Right. People could take offense. And of course, in our society, there are many times people become deeply offended, words hurt like anything, people go away from the movement because of something somebody said. It can be terribly devastating. So it is our responsibility to be super careful. Prana Govinda Prabhu, and then Mataji also had a question.
There's so much discussion this requires. I'm serious.
I'm not just
trying to encourage. I have a notes that I made this from Prabhupada's book.
Yeah.
The three way all the sufferings. And you hit some of it very nice. Thank you, I appreciate it. But there is one song of Rupa Goswami Pad's sloka. Suti Mauli Ratnamala Duti Nirajita Pada Pankajanta Ai Mukta Kuleru Pashamana. Very famous verse of holy name. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur made a song form for a fallen soul like me to grasp it. He sings, Gyani Gyana Joge Koriya Jatane Brahmere Shakshat Kare Brahma Shakshatkar Aprarabdha Karma. He put all these four karma in it. Brahma Shakshatkar Aprarabdha Karma Sampurna Gyanete Hare, which is applicable to all followers of Prabhupada. Those who are really listening, Bhagavatam chanting, they are Aprarabdha Karma Kuto Bija finished.
Right. Bhakti,
yeah. We have to accept the, this is the Siddhanta. Then it goes more further. Kintu prarabdha karma kabu nahi khay, phala bhoga bina kabu. Brahmabhuta jeev phala bhoga lagi janam marana labhu. Then he says that still we are suffering them. He said, no, this is due to prarabdha karma. You are reacting instead of tolerating and inviting the Lord in your heart. Because he gave a very, very secret. He said, while suffering devotees, burning their bad karma, what is the state of consciousness they are in? That is the standard of measurement to progress. While I'm suffering, while I'm being humiliated by other devotee or whatever, what is my consciousness? How am I taking Krishna's shelter, Prabhupada's shelter? That is what counts in Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And he says, Kintu he naam tavaspurti hale ekanti janero aro. Prarabdha aprarabdha kichu nahi thake vede gahe baro baro. It's in a song form, a Gitamala. Then he says, but take shelter of holy name. If some or other, by the mercy of other Vaishnava and Guru, spurti comes, prarabdha aprarabdha kuto bijo, everything finished, doom. You are completely done with the material. And you will be into spiritual ecstasy. Therefore, holy name shelter is the most fundamental, only way in this age. Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much. Mataji had one last question and then we stop. No, that is mine.
I just want to clarify about the point of suffering that Krishna gives to the devotees. Sometimes, often, I can say I come to a point that like I take it as an opportunity that why Krishna give me this suffering to me. So is it like Krishna is always helping the devotees to come to a point that we reach complete surrender unto him, which is the highest quality of a devotee, to till we reach that point, he always wants to give us lessons. Till we learn how to surrender unto him. So I just want to know like what Krishna wants from our, why Krishna gives us sufferings is to learn how to surrender unto him. So that is what he's expecting from us to learn.
So. Well, I mean, that's a broad question. I would say Krishna gives us suffering for us to reorient us from the material world to him. And then, you know, surrender is one of the final components, you could say, but philosophically understanding our position, this is also useful. Experience, you know, realize knowledge. Dukkhalayam ashashvatam, we hear in the Bhagavad Gita. But do we accept it? Do we really accept it? Do we realize it? Do we understand it? So, it is not a... It's difficult to give a one-liner, a simple reason for, you know, the suffering that Krishna is giving. Ultimately, it is to, yes, take us to the point of surrender. But the way that is accomplished is through a whole life experience. I mean, the whole experience of life is meant to teach us the truths of Scripture, to convince us to take up Scripture. Yes, this is true, because see, this is happening. I can see it is happening. So, Bhagavad Gita is true. And so, slowly we progress, we become more and more determined, we get to the stage of Nishtha, and then, you know, from there on we start to move towards Krishna. But like I said, the purposes for suffering, I can share this PowerPoint with you, are different for the three different levels of devotees. That's the idea. So the Prema Bhakta is different from the Bhava Bhakta is different from the Sadhana. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna.